I just want to put a little bow on what we've experienced here with just a few devotional thoughts. This passage that we're anchored in these days contains just this great statement. And it's a contrarian statement when you think about it. Jesus says, the thief comes only to steal, kill, and destroy. And we've seen that underscored in our world this week. But I came that they may have life and have it abundantly. And don't you taste in a service like this, hearing stories like this, that I want more of that life? I mean, my goodness, just to see middle schoolers not only getting baptized, but to have 40 or 50 of them in the back of the church kind of standing, witnessing with their peers. I mean, middle school, you might want to go back to your younger years, but I don't know anybody who says, you know what, I'd like to go back and do middle school again. It is a jungle. But there's a community that, far from perfect, I'm sure there's plenty of hard stuff and, you know, girl drama in our middle school ministry, just like there is in school, but not like there is in school, not as much of it. Because the gospel's at the root of this community, and it's different. It gives kids a place. It gives them hope. It gives them a place to belong. They have some security. And we all need that. Jesus is the one who offers it. And when you see it in somebody, it's attractive. David Brooks, the well-known New York Times columnist, back in April wrote a piece. And he said, it started this way, about once a month, I run across a person who radiates an inner light. These people can be in any walk of life. They seem deeply good. They listen well. They make you feel funny and valued. You often catch them looking after other people, and as they do, their laugh is musical and their manner is infused with gratitude. They're not thinking about what wonderful work they're doing. They're not thinking about themselves at all. About once a month, he runs across these people, and there's something very winsome and attractive. But then he goes on to say, when I meet such a person, it brightens my whole day. But I confess I often have a sadder thought. It occurs to me that I've achieved a decent level of career success, but I've not achieved that. I've not achieved that generosity of spirit or that depth of character. And Brooks goes on to contrast what he calls resume virtues with eulogy virtues. You know, resume virtues, he says, you know, those are the skills you bring to the marketplace. Your degrees, your professional credentials, your successes, the status symbols and positions you've accumulated along the way. And they will, for a time, get you forward in life. But they tend to be very different from eulogy virtues. You know, those are the things people say about you when you die. Were you a kind, brave, honest, or faithful person? Did you love? I don't know about you, but I don't want to come to the day of my death and have people read my obituary as if it was just a resume list of the things I did. I want some people to get up and from the heart tell some stories and pay tribute to the things that matter much more, you know, character and virtue. And ultimately, at the end of the day, love. I mean, that's the best thing you hear at anybody's funeral. Some people close to them said, you know, they were just so self-giving. They were just so wholeheartedly devoted. They were just constant and faithful, and I knew they loved me. And I could tell you story after story that just demonstrates how. You know, Jesus, he's the king of eulogy, virtues, and value. See, it's the meaning, and that's for those of you who are tracking with the series. We talked about the abundant life being a relationship with Christ, about the abundant life having a rhythm, an ebb and a flow, a shape that's life-giving. I want you to think for a moment about meaning, because the abundant life is one that is a life of meaning, because it's based on the meaningful life of Jesus, the self-giving, sacrificial love of Jesus. This is what he says. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I've come that they may have life and have it abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. The hired hand is not the shepherd and does not own the sheep. So when he sees the wolf coming, he abandons the sheep and runs away. Then the wolf attacks and the flock and scatters it. The man runs away because he's a hired hand and cares nothing for the sheep. I'm the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me, just as the Father knows me and I know the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. No one takes it from me, but I lay it down of my own accord. And wouldn't you like to know the security of that strong love? That Jesus is the one. He knows you and he claims ownership of you. Not so that he can lord it over you, not so that he can just be your boss, but so he could be your good shepherd. Because he owns you and he knows you, he will do anything for you. That term, the good shepherd, is instructive. That word good doesn't so much speak to moral quality as it speaks to attractiveness and beauty. You know, like when you have really good food, you're not saying that is morally upright food. You're saying that is tasty food. That is good food. Well, that's exactly what the Greek word is, kalos. He's the attractive shepherd. He's the beautiful shepherd. Because of his self-giving love, he's so winsome. He's the king of eulogy virtue. And oh, when you come to know that love, it ravishes you. It transports you. It secures you. And it transforms you. Because your life is so cemented and attached to Jesus that, you know, where he goes, you go. What he does, you do. You find yourself becoming a person far less about resume virtues, far more about eulogy virtues. You want to follow in his path. You take up your cross daily and follow him in self-giving, sacrificial, but oh, utterly meaningful love. I got a wonderful, encouraging email this week from a man in our congregation. And, you know, he was just telling me about, you know, during this month of gratitude, we've been pasting sticky notes up in the lobby, fall colored sticky notes with just things we're thankful for. We've been doing this photo thing every single day, hashtag Willowdale gratitude, all these different things, you know, taking pictures of what we're grateful for and just practicing, you know, as some positive psychology wisdom tells us. If you would actually write down three things a day that you're thankful for, I mean, it's demonstrable. It will change your outlook. Well, this gentleman took the challenge and wrote to tell me about it. He goes, I was very encouraged by your challenge to write down three things a day that I'm grateful for. I went home and wrote down 45 things. I could have gone on, but figured I might need to save some. Since then, I've continued faithfully with at least three a day and seen multiple benefits, and here they are. Relief from depression, substantially decreased anxiety, a strong desire to encourage others and actually doing more of it, a way to strike up conversations about faith, 4 or 5 so far, an ability to tolerate pain more easily. And I know a little bit of his situation, and he told me more, enumerating some of the ongoing and chronic conditions that he has to deal with on a day-by-day basis. But what strikes me is, you know, taking note of the myriad blessings that God pours out, you know, in every good and perfect gift, the scriptures say, come down from the Father of light. Every good thing you enjoy is ultimately traceable back to the good shepherd, the giver of all good things. And as you take note of that, as you revel in that, it transforms you. And now all of a sudden it's like, you know, not only am I having to focus less on my own predicament, which is substantial, depression and anxiety and some chronic pain. But I want to encourage others. And I find myself just naturally doing it. I have opportunities to share my faith with others and pour into them. See, we're blessed in order to be a blessing. And as you acknowledge the blessings, you just become more of a blesser. I love the way he signed off at the end of his email. He said, "With the love that only comes from the Spirit of God, John." What a contrast to David Brooks' article. He said that if he was going to become more of a person, not about resume, but about eulogy, he flat out says in the article, "I knew I would have to work harder to save my own soul." And that's the world's way. You know, you see a picture of this virtuous life and you're like, "I got to double down and work harder. I got to strive more. I'm going to have to save my own soul." But the gospel of God is, you can't save your own soul. You know, like David Opong said, you know, I thought I wasn't worthy. I'd have to somehow get myself together before I could go to God. No, you go to God because you can't get yourself together. You know, you will never have the eulogy virtues you desire just trying to screw up your willpower and make it go. No, we come to him precisely because, "God, I want my life to have meaning. I want it to count. I want not only people to laud me on the day of my death, but I want to hear the ultimate eulogy." The word means good word or well word. When we come to meet our God face to face and he says, "Well done, good and faithful servant, enter into the joy of your Lord." There's an abundant life that's available to each of us. And oh, I just pray so much that you'd take another step toward it. What's your next step into it? Is it to trust Christ? Say, "God, today's the day. I came to church and I was afraid they were going to try to convert me. And here I am, and I need you to forgive my sins and lead my life." Could you humble yourself enough to do that? Maybe for some it's like, you know what, it's time to jump out and jump into the baptismal pool. This is not a declaration about how great a Christian you are. It's just a simple statement of faith. I'm uniting my life with Jesus. I want to be in tandem with him. I want him to lead me on. We have 5 more people getting baptized, not just next service, next Sunday. If it's your time, get in the water with us next Sunday. And can I just say a brief word? Don't be frightened. But I love what was it Sydney who said, "This is just between me and God." And I'm back there saying, "And about 500 other people." But you know, it really is. It doesn't matter whether there's, you know, 5 in the audience or 500. You do it with the body of believers. But it is, it's between you and God. It's about just having your heart turned toward God. And don't get psyched out about having to do it publicly. It is a public declaration. That's integral to what baptism is. Don't get freaked out about having to write your story, because I have many people who are like, "I can never write like that." Well, guess what? All our storytellers have editors, okay? Why do all the stories sound so well? Because we got some people that, you know, help shape them up. And if you feel like, "I can't even write sentence 1, hey, I have actually done this before. I've had people say, like, "You know, I can't even write. I'll tell it to you and you write it." And I've done that. I've sat down or talked on the phone. It's like, "Tell me your story. I'm taking notes." I write it, send it back. It's like, "Does this represent you well? Do you like it? Does it feel like your story? Sounds great. Tell that one." You know? I mean, it's not made up, you know? But hey, some of the books you like best had ghostwriters, okay? So, you know, don't let that stop you. Is that your next step? Or maybe for you, like, your next step is, "You know what? It's like my first time this church. There's something here. Maybe I ought to come back." Maybe you want to come back next Sunday. You know, that'd be a streak, man. 2 Sundays in a row, you know? And just investigate more. Hey, you're among friends. You're among fellow, broken, imperfect, just stumbling forward on our way people. But Jesus will turn your life into something abundant and blessed. He'll build eulogy virtue into you. Would you stand with me? We're going to pray, and the band's going to come out and lead us in one more song. And now, Lord God, We thank you for not only your tremendous sacrificial love for us, but, you know, just for your patience with us. Because so often we're so slow to respond. And even when we feel the nudge or somebody's pulling us, oh, we want to stiffen and harden and say, I'm not going to do it. God, soften us. Part of Jesus' great eulogy virtue is his humility. May we be humble people and willing to take our next step of faith and trust and obedience to you. Amen.